Welcome to the GOG Cast, brought to you by XSplit Broadcaster. Simple yet powerful, live streaming and recording. And now, your host, Leah.
Welcome to another Girls on Games podcast. My name is Leah, and I am your host for this show. This is episode number 123, and we got another great one for you. This week, topic of the show is an interview with Tina Narvosky, who is a 2D animator working on Cuphead. I know everybody's excited to play that game because it looks so damn cool. So yeah, stay tuned for that. But of course, I want to introduce you to all the fine friends I have sitting around my digital table. Catherine, how are ya?
I'm good. I'm just waiting for the storm to hit, so hopefully I don't lose power. Right, I'm on a laptop. We can lose power.
Well, except for your internet going down.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. We can't internet.
No, I'll see it. Oh, well.
Get good.
All right.
Get good.
Simon, how are
Hello.
You?
Hello. I'm good. I don't know if the storm hit already, because I wasn't watching outside, so I might also get fucked, but we'll see what happens.
We in Montreal have the problem that it is hailing right now. But yeah. Nixie's here with us, and she doesn't have this problem because she's not in Montreal. How you doing, girl?
I'm doing good. We had flash floods today, so I might not have hail, but we got all kinds of storm warnings. And
the apocalypse is happening everywhere. It's happening right now. Stay indoors, play some games. Let's talk about that. What games have you guys all been gaming? Nixie?
I've been doing the FPS trifecta, I guess, for Xbox, which is Battlefield, Overwatch, and Halo, but I'm getting back into Siege. So.
Nice. I haven't played Siege in a long time, but I can only play Tarot Hunt with any sort of skill. So let's play together.
We should.
Yes, let's do that.
Definitely.
And I will suck. It will be hilarious.
I have strong shoulders, my dear. Stream. I shall carry you.
Yes, please do. Carry me. Michael will probably jump into that, too.
Damn, I'll carry him, too. I'll carry all the people.
Carry the whole team. He's better than me on first-person shooters. Catherine, how about you?
Except for my lunchtime Overwatch, not much. Not gonna lie, I've been feeling under the weather, so I've been mostly doodling on my iPad and keeping a low profile. But I did order through work the Ezio collection because I feel like playing Assassin's Creed 2 and Brotherhood again.
You just want to look at Ezio Auditore.
In HD.
Yes. I feel you, sister. I feel you.
That Ezio butt.
Indeed.
That Ezio everything.
That swab mother effa. How about you, Simon? What are you playing?
CSGO mostly, but like recently, this week I've just been, for the last 2 weeks, I've just been getting home, just watching videos on YouTube and just falling asleep. It's been pretty intense at work, so I have no energy to even play a video game, so I'm just like, fuck it.
I've been going hardcore that Minecraft and so a little bit of Splatoon, but I've actually been doing a lot of watching Let's Plays too because I don't know, like you said, is this work's intense and at least I can get my gaming kind of fix. I've been watching Persona 5 from Johnny Awesome and he's awesome doing it. Good thing that's his name. Seriously. But yeah, I have this like torn feeling right now because I'm watching him play and I'm like, I really should be playing this, but I don't have the time to play it. But it's convenient because I can kind of listen to him and enjoy the experience at the same time. So yeah, I'm kind of torn, but like I probably should have picked up that game, but I don't have time for a 90-hour game with everything else going on. Plus, I can't take my PlayStation on the go with me. It's a problem. It's unfortunate.
Oh, I've been actually one thing I've been doing, playing Mega Man X at work and impressing people. So that was kind of cool.
Awesome.
I one shot Chill Penguin. People are like, oh wow, that's really awesome. Oh, yeah, fuck yeah.
You're like, yeah.
Yeah, bunch of
I'm
nerds.
A gamer. Dust off that shoulder.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
That's why we do this, so we can press people at work. All right, let's get into news. We'll start that right after this break. We'll be right back. And we're back with some news this week. Catherine, what news story you got for me?
We finally have an update on the Stardew Valley multiplayer.
Yay!
Hype. So basically, there's a blog post on the official Stardew Valley site from the Chucklefish dev who's helping Concerned Apes with implementing this mode. So the way it's going to work, you will be able to ask Robin to build you some cabins to house up to 3 farm hands.
Oh.
And the farm hams are basically the farm hands, not farm ham, farm hands.
Unless you have pigs on your farm, then you do have farm,
have farm ham.
Yeah. Yeah.
And farm bacon and farm lard.
That's such a dad pun.
Yeah.
That's okay.
The blog post says that farm hands can do almost anything the main player can do. They can farm, mine, fight, fish, forage, marry NPCs, and take part in festivals. Each player has their own inventory. When a farmhand is not connected, their inventory can be managed through a chest in their cabin. So you're basically joining and helping somebody in their game. So it says that certain decisions can only be made by the main player. When to sleep, when to start and end festival, and whether to side with Joja, for instance.
Mm.
So yeah, it's basically your player too.
I mean, no one sides with JoJo unless you're fucking evil. So.
Well, the point of the game is that you were working for JoJo and you're like, fuck this, I'm going to build a farm.
So unless would you side for JoJo?
Unless you really hated farming.
You heartless mother flipper.
Also, you know, last week we had Dan from Watch Mojo.
Yep.
Have you noticed that the JoJo logo and the Watch
Looks
Mojo logo?
Like... He talked about that. He freaked out about it. He was like, why don't you people care? And his marketing team were like, whatever, Joe.
Yeah, I remember him mentioning it in the interview, and I was just like, what the fuck? He's right.
that's
a little throwback to last week's episode. Listen to it if you haven't.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. Even as soon as we got this info, Steffi and I were like, co-stream of our playing something. Because we're essentially playing a skin of Stardew Valley in Minecraft right now.
Yeah.
The only thing is you can, like, we can decide who wants to sleep. The world goes on when we're not there if somebody else jumps in, or like I can continue and progress the game and I can sleep when I feel like, or she can sleep when she feels like. But this is not coming till next year, right?
I don't think so, because he put a to-do list that they have right now, and it's to implement the farmhand cabins, UI and menus, events and festivals, multiplayer NPC relationship, polish, testing, and optimization.
So pretty much everything.
I think they just spent all this time trying to figure out how the fuck can they implement a multiplayer in a game that wasn't meant to have a multiplayer.
That makes sense.
And for it to not destroy the essence of the game. So I think this is a great way to have multiplayer games. It's not a 100% collaborative effort like a Minecraft server, but at the same time, it's not Minecraft, you know.
But well, good though. Okay, go ahead, Simon.
I was just going to say that Stardew Valley has a story kind of sort of that you need to follow, whereas Minecraft, unless you have mods and stuff, it's pretty much you log in and start building shit, whereas, you know, Stardew Valley, yes, you build shit, but there's actually a progression to your character and stuff happening, so I can see why it would be a challenge to make it multiplayer, because you're reliant on one player advancing that story.
And that's actually something that Steph and I were dealing with too. It's like, who chooses what? There's no leader, and like, even me, she brought me into the server, so at first, also, I was a Minecraft noob, and like, the creepers were blowing me up and all this kind of stuff. I didn't know what the heck was going on. I always felt bad, because I'm like, but I'm destroying your game. But she's like, it's not my game, it's everybody's game. And I'm like, well, then I'm destroying everybody's shit, and they're all gonna be mad at me. But yeah, like, having a leader kind of works, and then bringing people along for the ride. Did you say 3 extra people?
Well, you can build 3 cabins.
Okay, that's kind of cool. But, like, what happens then if, like, one person comes in and somebody else doesn't? Like, are they just, like,
the main player
or something?
The main player has to be there. I'm pretty sure the main player has to be there.
Yeah, so now it says Robin will offer to build up to 3 cabins on your farm. Each cabin will house a farmhand controlled by one of your friends. So, essentially, you can play alone, and if you're playing, then somebody off your friend list on Steam can jump in and help you play the game. And if they're not there, you can access their shit through a chest in their cabin.
That's kind of cool and really designed for like co-streaming. I think they looked at I think 4 is a good number. You know what I mean?
It is. And like honestly, like do you need really more than 4 for one farm?
No.
I mean, I'm already making millions and I'm alone, so
oversaturated.
Look at the ball over there.
Yeah, but you could divide and conquer. One person could go do mines, the other person could go fish, the other person can like do the animal thing, and the other one could do like the crop thing. Because that's what Steph and I do. We divide and conquer, right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like the second dungeon, the one where you can't save where you're at, I've never made it very far deep down because I'm not good at that part of the game. So having friends play with me means we could go and get that Chevo that I can't get on my own.
Have I ever told you that I like how you say achievement when you Chevo. Say Chevo? Chevo? It's cool. It's cool.
I forget where I picked that up. Somewhere on the internet.
I like it. Sweet. Well, we'll look forward to that next year. Nixie, what have you got for me?
So today, which was a coincidence, because I ended up falling on some Witcher news, but it happens to be National Coloring Book Day.
Ooh. Oh,
yeah, and Dark Horse announced that Witcher 3, A Wild Hunt, is going to have their very own coloring book, which is going to come out November 1st. And I know that there's this big fad where everyone started downloading apps and coloring them in and stuff like that, but I'm actually really interested in getting this one, even though, I mean, it's obviously not a book that you give your niece or your nephew, like, here, color in this naked dude in a bathtub, or check out this creature getting
but
chopped off
in
half.
This pumpkin.
This art, this idea of, like, coloring as, like, therapy, too, is super big. Yeah. I bought my husband a bunch of coloring books for Valentine's Day, kind of as a joke, but kind of too at the same time. But they're all, like, swear word ones. So, yeah, this is not ones that you give kids, right?
Yeah, I've seen that. That's awesome.
But I think that's a cool idea and a new way to, like, drag your video game love into your therapy session. Maybe you can't play, but you can definitely sit there and watch a show and color in Geralt's pretty body.
I mean, I never thought about it. I thought it was cool because I used to love filling in and coloring, and it would relax me. But I never jumped on that coloring bandwagon. And I thought the F words and the swear curse word coloring books were really clever, but I just never ended up buying it. But I saw this morning, and I just thought it was really cool. And on the other side of things, I think they wanted to push and do everything they could with Gwent and this coloring book because they want to focus on Cyberpunk 2077.
Yes!
That's
good
what
idea.
I want!
So, it's a pretty good idea. So divert attention to other things while they work. Yeah,
check
it's
out
way,
this coloring book while I work on Cyberpunk.
It's very smart because you essentially, you know, divide attention and people still feel like there's stuff coming out, but you're giving yourself space to build that masterpiece.
Yeah. So that's my little snippet.
I like it.
Cool.
Simon, what do you got?
Yeah, I actually have some bittersweet news, maybe some sad happy news. BioWare Montreal will officially shut down after the mess that was kind of Mass Effect Andromeda, even though they had almost nothing to do with the fact that it sucked. They couldn't keep at it. But the good news is that all the little people that worked on Mass Effect Andromeda and at Montreal will keep their job. They're just simply being moved to the EA Motive studio, which is also based in Montreal. So sad to see them go, but at least everyone has a job and everyone gets to keep working in video games. So that's cool.
Yeah, and it's also very normal for teams to move inside the same company, so it's always like whatever project needs people. And even when you run multiple projects, there's always like a stage where you need more people than it's very common.
And I was reading the article and I was surprised to see that BioWare Austin is working on a new Star Wars The Old Republic, which I did not fucking know.
What?
I
really?
Mean, that's what BioWare Austin Studio is still working on. Oh, maybe it's the MMO.
Oh, no.
It's probably the MMO.
Okay, I'm not.
But also, Edmonton is busy finishing Anthem for launch next year, as well as early development on the next Dragon Age. And I did not know that the next Dragon Age was already being worked on. So
what?
It's kind of a double exciting. Whammy in that article. I was like, I did not know that.
It's like, let's slide these two things in there. I mean, we've got some sad news, but don't worry. Everybody's going to be okay. I mean, there's no way they were going to be able to get away from that stigma. Whatever they did the next game, it was almost like a better marketing move to wrap it into Motive, because no one's going to think about Andromeda when the next Motive game comes out, right?
Yeah. It's really a great way to clean their image. And, you know, like, EA Motive is working on... Do we know what they're working on?
Star Wars,
right. So, you know, it's a great project to be working on.
Yeah. That's true. And you know what? This kind of fixed the issue, I guess, between, you know, Edmonton team, Montreal team, like the kind of little battle they were having going on. Mm-hmm, and, you know, if Edmonton needs help, then they're just going to pull in people from Motive for a little bit. And then they'll go back to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And speaking of BioWare, they recently announced that game designer Corey Gasper passed away.
Yeah, sad news.
Very sad news. He worked on... He was there for over nine years, almost 10, and he worked on most of the games, and he was recently working on Anthem, and unfortunately he passed away, so.
It's too bad. Sad. Our thoughts and well wishes go out to his family and friends and those that worked with him as his colleagues. All right. It's time to jump into topic of the show. This week we've got an interview with Tina Narvosky. She is one of the 2D animators working on Cuphead, and this is really interesting because who would have thought a video game would be totally drawn by hand? So cool. All right, let's get into that right after this break. Tina Narvosky, sitting across the digital table from me, 2D animator, happens to be working on Cuphead. Tina, thank you for coming to talk with me today.
No problem. I'm excited.
Oh, this is going to be super awesome. So I came across your stuff on Twitter, of all places, and discovered, one, you're a woman doing a 2D animation job working on Cuphead, and I believe you're based in Toronto?
Yeah, currently in Toronto. I'm an ex-Montrealer. I've been living in Toronto for 4 years now.
Oh, that's awesome. So the studio that you're currently working at that's working on Cuphead, is it the game company proper or is it a extension studio?
So it's for Studio MDHR, but we're a kind of non-traditional studio. We all work from home and we convene online. So we have some animators in the States, another animator in Vancouver. I'm here in Toronto.
Wow. Cool, the internet to make a game. Everybody coming together. I love this. All right, before we get into the nitty gritty, can you give me some background on yourself and how you got into 2D animation?
Oh, sure. I've been drawing since I was a really little kid, and I was mostly self-taught. I would paint oil paintings and realism and copy great masters as a kid. And then I went to college in Montreal, actually, to Dawson College. It's a three-year program called Illustration and Design. And that's where I took my first animation class. And it was funny because I always loved theater, like acting on stage as well as drawing. And for the first time ever, I saw, wow, it's both. It's animation is acting while drawing. So it was an aha moment for me in college. I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to apply my art to animation. So I got my first job after I finished college through a teacher. And that's the first way that I got into animating. And then I started working in the video game industry right away, actually.
Oh, wow. So are you a gamer?
No, actually, it's a really funny story. When I first got my first job in gaming, I asked, what's a console? I didn't know what a console was. My family wasn't really big on video games. We like read a lot of books. We watched a lot of animated films, but we didn't play any games. So I didn't know anything when I first started working in games.
Wow, that's impressive. So like, did you have to take like a crash course in video games?
I know a lot more because I was surrounded by gaming culture. Everybody in the studio played games and I gave it a shot. I really still am terrible at it. I'm actually really terrible on our own game, I can't play it very well. So I have to have a help of a really good gamer so I actually don't die constantly. So yeah, it's a pretty tough thing for me still.
So did you work on any titles prior to Cuphead?
I worked on a lot of casual games in Montreal. I worked for several studios there, and it was mostly, it was still 2D animation that I did, but it was casual games for, you know, iPad, iPhone. When I started out, it was actually 10 years ago when I started out, it was online portals were the thing, like little games online. That's where I started for kids. We did some stuff for National Geographic, things like that. And then when I moved to Toronto, that's when I started working on Cuphead. It's my first big console game.
Wow. Now, the transition from Montreal to Toronto, was that for work or just personal reasons?
It was strange because I'm one of those people that always continue learning. So I did Dawson College, but when I was in Montreal, I would take night classes at Concordia University in film animation. And I would do a lot of those classes while working full time. And then at some point I said, I want to continue learning more. And I quit my job in Montreal and I moved to Toronto to go to Sheridan College in animation. And I did 2 years of that. And you know, I also did some great online classes with a school called Studio Technique with Samantha Youssef, who's the main teacher. And she used to work for Disney in the 2D department. She's a wonderful, wonderful teacher. So I'm always hungry to learn. So the move was kind of based on me wanting to learn more and do more classes and, you know, keep getting better at what I do.
Oh, wow. And so how did you get the job? Because it seems like it's a little different than applying for a gig online to be able to work on an animation project that is video games.
Yeah, actually, it's funny because I was a little bit sad that I wasn't born 10 years ago when 2D animation was still, you know, at its heyday, where Disney was hiring 2D animators to work on paper animations. And I remember I had this discussion with one of my Sheridan teachers. I was so sad. I'm like, I was born too late. Nobody will ever hire me to do an on-paper project. It's all computers. So I kept doing 2D animation, just, you know, the classical style, flipping paper at home for myself, putting it on my blog just for fun. And when I went to Sheridan, I did all my projects on paper because that's what I love to do. And then Chad, who is one of the Moldenhauer brothers, he's the art director at Studio MDHR, found my work online. And I had known about Cuphead. I saw one of the trailers. I was so excited about it. And he approached me. He's like, hey, I saw some of your stuff. You look like a great 2D animator. Do you want to do a test for us and jump on board? So that's how it happened.
Well, it looks like a match made in heaven, because it's Cuphead, the style of it, is something we haven't seen in video games before. And the first time.
It's a first. It's a historical first where we're doing traditional 2D animation, all on paper, all inked on paper. The background's all painted watercolor on paper. And it's for a video game. We've had, you know, film, TV show, all that, but never a video game. It's the first time.
Wow, we're super excited to play it. So, like, let's get into the nitty-gritty in Cuphead then. What exactly have you worked on in the game?
So I started working on Cuphead 2 years ago. We're actually a ridiculously small art team on Cuphead. I know everybody keeps complaining that, you know, why is it taking so long? Why is it taking so long? But when I started 2 years ago, we were only 4 animators and 1 inking artist.
Wow.
So there's only one person, and her name is Maya Moldenhauer. She's actually Chad's wife, and she does all the inking for the entire game by herself. So I'm a 2D animator and a concept artist for the game, which is really lovely that they give us a lot of creative freedom in the studio. They want the animators to create the characters that they animate. And a lot of other companies or studios will get a model sheet. The character's already designed for you by somebody else, and then you have to animate it. Whereas here, we'll give you a theme or a general idea of a character that they want, but then you get to design the character that you're going to animate. So that was really great. It's a really great experience.
Wow. Okay. Then you have to tell me what characters have you worked on, because now I'm going to be looking out in the game.
Yeah. So some of the characters, actually, because I started only 2 years ago, the project had started before, and some other great animators were working on it, like Jay Clark and Joseph Coleman and Hannah. And I started on some platforming levels that were released later so that the audience has seen them online. It's the forest level. You have these kind of smug daisies that fall from the sky and these little blue slime balls that run around back and forth. And there's this purple flower that shoots exploding seeds. So I animated all of those. And I actually worked on a lot of the platforming levels in the game, which I'm not allowed to describe. They're coming. They're very exciting. It's not only a forest level. There's going to be a lot more, but I'm not allowed to really talk about it. I worked on some of the devil hell kind of theme things that's coming on. And also, it's obviously Cuphead and Mugman gambled with a devil. So there's a lot of casino themed stuff in the game. And so I worked on some of the casino themed bosses. One of them was shown in the last trailer that was the release trailer. It's a roulette ballerina. It's like a little roulette thing, and she has a skirt, and she like pataberets across the screen. So that one's been shown. I worked on her. But then I worked on a really amazingly awesome boss level, which hasn't been seen, hasn't been talked of before. So I'm super excited to talk about her. The boss is called Baroness Von Bonbon. Yes, which is a lovely name.
I love it.
Her level is called Sugarland Shimmy.
Ooh.
Yes, so it's a very colorful, delicious, candy-themed level, which is hilarious because I got assigned this level without Chad or Jarrett knowing me very well yet, and I have a huge sweet tooth. I love cookies and candies and all that stuff, so I had like a very personal attachment to this level, and the backgrounds that are painted by Caitlin Russell, she paints all our backgrounds, they're just, you know, too good to be true. You can eat them with a spoon. They're super delicious. So she looks like a candy princess, and it's very exciting.
Tell me you went out and bought tons of candy as research. I'm doing air quotes.
Absolutely. No, but funny though, we try and stick so much to the 1930s style that I had to do a lot of historical research about candies.
Oh, wow.
Like, when was the Reese's Pieces invented? Because it has to be 1930s. If it was invented in the 1940s or 50s, I can't include it in the game.
Whoa.
So a lot of Wikipedia research went into this.
That's really cool. Who would have thought that? Like, I would have figured you just go out to like Bulk Barn and you're like jujubes and cinnamon hearts and whatever else, but you have to go back and look like, when was a cinnamon heart brought into existence?
Yeah. And a lot of them have been around since the 30s. It was really exciting to hear that some things are so historical when it comes to candy and treats, that they've been, you know, kids have been eating them for decades upon decades. So it's really great. But some of them were nixed, unfortunately, because they were invented later. So I couldn't use them in the game.
Wow. Well, you mentioned that, you know, by going to Toronto, you got to work with an animator who worked at Disney. Is this a normal style of animation for you? This like throwback 1930s-esque animation?
Actually, it's not. It's not a style that's animated very frequently, I find. That's another reason why it's a wonderful choice for a game. It's very nostalgic. People don't use it nowadays. It has a slight creep factor to it because in the 1930s, there were no rules. You know, there wasn't rules like, oh, you're not allowed to scare children, or you're not allowed to make things morph from one thing to another. So right. It was kind of like the Wild West of animation. It's a very interesting style. It's very experimental, very kooky. And so things change and there's no rules, so nobody cares. And for a video game, that's really wonderful because then you could surprise the player. You think you're fighting something and then it turns into something completely different. It's exciting. And there are no rules, so you can't make any mistakes, really. They'll accept it. It's, you know, it's just a crazy world. So it's great.
That's the thing about video games. We kind of like throw realism by the wayside and are just like, okay, whatever happens. To the point where when they do throw realism into games and small little things like they did in Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, you're thrown for a loop because you don't even think about doing that.
Yeah.
What other types of animation are you traditionally working on?
So my favorite for personal work type of 2D animation is the Golden Age Disney classic animation, the Nine Old Men, kind of the traditional movies like Robin Hood and the stuff that you grew up with as a kid, Aladdin, all that kind of animation. I'm also really inspired by Studio Ghibli films of Hayao Miyazaki as the director. I think his animation style is gorgeous. So that's the type of animation that I do in my personal time. But when you're working in studios, you have to adapt your style of animation regardless. Every time you have a new project, it's going to be a different style. So you have to be very flexible and just go with the style that is given to you. So I've experimented with a variety of animation styles.
And outside of researching candy, was there anything else you had to research in the process of making your versions of characters in the game?
Yes, of course. I mean, it's a very distinct style. It has distinct rules. Thankfully, Chad and Jared, so Chad is the art director, Jared does the game design, we're the Moldenhauer brothers, who are, you know, the geniuses behind this whole project. They're huge 1930s animation nerds. They grew up on those cartoons. Their parents really loved them. So instead of watching He-Man or whatever 1980s cartoons were on TV, they would watch these old VHSs of Betty Boop and Popeye and, you know, Flip the Frog. And so they are super aware of what makes the style its original style. So they gave us a lot of films to watch. Every day I would watch a Betty Boop cartoon, you know, the old Mickey Mouse, the Silly Symphonies, Flip the Frog from Ooob Iwerks. I would watch all of those and then get inspired by that and start working. And if anything would slightly stray off that style, Chad or Jared would call it right away and then give me a reference. Oh, have you seen this episode of Popeye? Go to, you know, minutes 2:33 seconds. You'll see something that's exactly the type of feel we want. So they were very helpful. They always had their references ready for us, but a lot of watching cartoons was involved, a lot of cartoons.
That's impressive. How is animating for a video game different from, say, a short film?
The process is very different. One of the things that's very challenging for animating for a video game is, especially if you're animating enemies, most enemies have to have a certain amount of animations always. One of them is called an idle cycle. It's basically what they do when they're doing nothing. So they're just standing around waiting for the player to respond, and they have to have an animation. Then they have an attack animation, sometimes several, and then usually a death animation. So the challenge there is that you don't want to be boring. You don't want everybody to die the same way or attack the same way. So you have to be super creative and think up crazy ideas of how to make these animations work and not bore the player to death. And loop animation, which is basically when the animation repeats itself over and over, is very challenging to animate. I don't know if people who love animation are probably aware of Richard Williams, who was the director of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He also wrote the Bible for animators, the Animator's Survival Kit. And he said, if you want to learn good animation, animate walk cycles, so people walking, because it's a loop. So you'll see your mistakes. And if you're animating a scene in a TV show or a film, the scene starts and ends and then you move on. The person's not going to see it over and over again. So even if you have a little mistake in there, nobody's going to focus on it. It's just, you know, you move on, you got the point of a scene and it's fine. Whereas when you're animating loops, the player will see a mistake. If there's something that's really odd and awful in it, they'll see it over and over and over. So you have to animate perfectly. People keep saying that our animations are smooth as butter. They have to be, because otherwise you'll notice right away if there's a mistake.
So when designing the character, then, are you also designing their attack?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So you design a main character design. A lot of the times, Chad and Jared will have an idea of what the character's attack has to be, and just in the sense of it throws something, or the thing that it throws bounces, or something like that. But then we, the creative animators and concept artists, have to figure out what makes that funny. How is that different than any other character in the game? And sometimes we'll brainstorm like 20 or 30 ideas and give it to Chad and Jared to see, usually with little thumbnail sketches or shit sketches, as some people call them, like really quick little doodles showing what it could be. And then Chad and Jared choose one that hasn't been seen before in the game. And that's how you move forward.
So do you draw every piece of the character's animation by hand and then scan it or import it somehow into the computer in order for them to put it into the game? Or are you drawing a lot of it on the computer?
So almost nothing is drawn on the computer, to be quite frank with you. The way that we work, because we all work online, as I mentioned, we have animators spread across, you know, the world, basically. We animate everything on paper at an animation desk, flipping pages with your hand and drawing with pencils. And then we have these pretty awesome scanners where you just feed your pages into the scanner and kind of sucks them up so you don't have to scan each page individually. We put it into a computer software that peg aligns, so make sure that the pages are all aligned nicely. And then we upload it to a server online where Chad and Jared take those drawings and Maya prints them. And she inks over on paper by hand with a pen, and then she re-scans it so that the color artists can color the characters. So the only thing really done digitally is the colors of the characters. The backgrounds are all painted by hand in watercolor and then scanned in. The characters are all drawn and then inked by hand, but the colors are done on the computer. And the only reason is Chad and Jared did tests at the beginning where they painted colors on cells like you would back in the day. And they tested that versus colors done on the computer. And it didn't make that much of a difference. So we're like, okay, this is the one thing that we can do on the computer is just put the colors on the characters. Whereas for outlines are still done by hand.
Wow, that's impressive. Like the amount of work plus the amount of people involved. It's very much like your traditional comic book.
We have also piles and piles of our drawings. I have a closet full of Cuphead drawings in boxes. And my has boxes and boxes of inked drawings at her apartment. So it's all physically there. We have it in our closets.
Wow. How do you archive something like that?
We're not sure yet. I think we're figuring that out. Of course, I think Chad was saying, don't quote me on this. He was saying that perhaps people would be interested in buying some of original drawings one day. And I'm sure some people would. So there's that option. We were also talking a little bit about exhibiting one day some of the original art so that people can see it. So there's that. But for now, we're just keeping it all in our apartments and see what happens next.
I would buy a piece. I would go to an exhibition in a museum in a heartbeat. Like, it's so impressive.
It's just we all have to organize it, right? So I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But I think it's a wonderful idea. I think it would be great to go to see a Cuphead exhibit somewhere in a museum, you know?
Yeah, that would be so cool. I also saw that Clueless Gamer, a.k.a. Conan O'Brien, his segment. So what did it feel like to see your art put on such a pedestal?
Well, it was super exciting. We found out weeks before the show actually aired, the whole team was told that Conan wanted to play our game. So we all freaked out, obviously. It's wonderful to see gamers get excited about our game, but having a late night talk show host get excited about our game is completely, you know, another whole league. So we were all super excited, and we got some feedback while Conan was playing the game that he really loved the art style. Yay! So for all the artists, we were all super touched and excited about it, and supposedly he really enjoyed it. Supposedly Kate Upton loved the game as well. So we were all, you know, thrilled to have our game out there to people who normally wouldn't see it, also non-gamers. That was a great opportunity.
So the game hasn't released yet as of us recording this, though it's coming soon. But what's been your favorite moment so far in this process? And, you know, do you expect it's just going to go up from here once the game releases?
Oh, I have no idea. I really hope, we all hope that the game will be a success. I think it will be. Everybody seems to be very positive reactions to the game. I can't pick a favorite moment. It's just been my dream job. It's one of those things that every day I pinch myself. It's so amazing working on it. We're still working hard to get it finished. I was saying that, you know, I was lamenting the fact that nobody will ever pay me to animate on paper anymore. It's all digital, it's all on the computer. And then my dream came true and I'm being paid to flip pages at my animation desk. So I was very aware how amazing that was from day one till today. So 2 years of my life have been amazing working on this game. No favorite moment. I love it all. Chad and Jared are lovely to work with. The team is lovely. There are several other people here in Toronto that I know really well that I hang out with. And it's just everybody's excited and putting so much love into the project. Sometimes when you work on games in other studios, people can get disheartened or blasé during a project, you know, there are tough times, but it hasn't happened here. Everybody's excited and in love with a project and super proud of it, which is amazing.
What do you think has been the biggest learning moment in this project?
Oh, definitely just animating every day on paper. I want to always tell young animators to let go of a computer for a bit and go back to drawing traditionally and animating traditionally. Computers solve a lot of problems and help you fix mistakes almost too quickly. You can't fix those mistakes quickly when you're working traditionally on paper. You have to see them and address them. And that's the great learning curve, is just drawing every day at the animation table on paper with no shortcuts, no undo button also, which is kind of funny. When you first start doing everything traditionally, you forget that you can't undo. You need to erase and go back. So to me, that has been the greatest learning experience, was being able to draw every day with a pencil on a piece of paper.
Well, flipping through your Blogspot website, I see so many different pieces of art of all different styles. What inspires you?
Well, so aside from animation, which I briefly mentioned that I'm inspired by The Nine Old Men, Milt Kahl, you know, Frank and Ollie. I love those types of animations and they inspire me. The Miyazaki movies are wonderful and I absolutely adore them. But for, I do illustration work as well. One of my favorite things to do on the side is I draw pinup caricatures of women. Because I want them to feel good and sexy and happy about themselves. And it's about body positivity. It doesn't matter what shape you are, you know, you can feel really good about yourself. So I draw these pinup caricatures in my own style, which is a more modern graphic style, but I get inspired by the very classic pinups from the 1950s. Like Gil Elfgren is one of my favorite pinup artists. They were so cute and just full of life and wonderful, wonderful illustrations. So I look to him, but I put my own twist on it. And of course, I'm inspired by the women who want these pinup caricatures done of themselves, for personality, what makes them special. And I love doing it.
Yeah, I think the first part of why I found you is because you had drawn some of my favorite RuPaul's Drag Race characters.
I'm such a fan. They're so wonderful. We're such talented performers. I think that what gets to me. And also, what's really fun about drawing them, because that's a personal project, I'm not doing it on commission, I'm doing it just for fun, is that they're such larger than life characters that they're already almost a cartoon themselves. So it's so much easier to draw them in a cartoony style because they're so dramatic and have such, you know, well-defined faces with makeup and these amazing kooky costumes, which are larger than life. So it's just a pleasure drawing them. I do that for fun to decompress. And I'm such a huge fan of the show and of course of all their talented performers. You know, I love theater, I love stand-up comedy. So it's all put in together into one with amazing makeup skills on top of it.
And lastly, before I let you go, I would like to know, what words of wisdom would you like to pass on to aspiring 2D animators who might want to get into the video game business?
Well, I think definitely being professional and starting to learn professionalism when you are in school or when you start working with small clients is very important. You have to build a good reputation. And a lot of the times your first jobs in the industry are going to be through contacts, through teachers that you've met, maybe other artists who know somebody who are looking for work. So building a really good, strong network is key to get your foot in the door. So great relationships with teachers, you know, obviously an online presence, Twitter, LinkedIn, or anything like that really helps out. But then of course, you have to back it up with, you know, the goods. You have to practice. Never let the pencil drop. Keep learning. Even when you get older and you think, you know, you're pretty well established and good at what you do, don't stop learning. Keep trying to find new mentors, new teachers, new artists that inspire you to try something else. Doing model drawing, just keeping working on your own skill set so that when you do get those dream jobs, you can deliver. And I think that's super important.
Tina, thank you so much for talking with me and sharing all this awesome knowledge. I want you to have the chance to let everybody know how they can follow you online as well.
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter. My name is Tina Nawrocki. It's spelled kind of weird. It's Nawrocki. It's a Polish family name. I'm from Poland originally. And I have a Twitter account. I have an Etsy store where you can order a custom pinup. If you want to see yourself as a cute and sexy cartoon, please feel free to order one. And of course, look forward to the game, to Cuphead, coming out September 29th. It's on Steam, so for Windows, as well as Xbox One.
Awesome. Thank you again. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it was wonderful. Thank you so much for finding me and taking the time.
And that pretty much wraps up our show for this week. Of course, we want to thank our wonderful sponsor, Fun.io. So if you're looking for some web hosting, be it something large like VPS, or maybe you're trying to start a WordPress blog, go check them out. Stream Team, Mr.
Yo,
Simon, what's
team.
Going down?
Business as usual, I guess I could say. Everyone is streaming almost, like, Dinksy's almost every day. That's crazy. Everyone's, again, we're still looking for more people. We're reaching out to people on Mixer. So if you're on Mixer, you're on Twitter, definitely hit us up and I'll get in touch with you.
Everybody's doing really well. I saw a lot of people make some high movement, you know, yeah. Nixie crossed that 1,000 mark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked Bianca about it last did. Week.
Yeah, so like it's moving. Mixer is fun. I haven't seen this much growth. Like this didn't happen on Twitch.
It's very, very quick how people grow and stuff. I feel that maybe it's quicker, but it'll drop off sooner because I guess maybe the reach is just not quite there yet. But so far, like everyone on the team has been doing really, really well. So Girls on Games on TV, come check it out. Always someone having a good time streaming. Perfect. Literally almost always.
Almost
someone
always.
Streaming.
Catherine, what's going on our website?
Pretty quiet week because we're working on a few things. We might have a Sundered review. We might have a Pyre review. Some nice indie games that will be coming up soon. If they're not already there by the time this episode comes out.
Sweet. That happens when you pre-record things. You don't know what's going to happen the rest of the week. It's magic.
And if you still have no idea what Dream Daddy is about, my review is still on the site.
Go read it, then go play it.
I have lived vicariously my Dream Daddy dreams with Kat and our friend Alice playing Dream Daddy because that's all they talked about for a while.
I replayed today because they released a mini game in one of the Robert states, and I was like, I have to play it.
Nice.
Amazing.
So that's what I did. But nah, next week, the original Dream Daddy, Ezio.
Cool.
There. Oh, yeah. The OG Dream Daddy.
Wow.
Drops mic.
On that note, I want to give everybody the chance to throw out their social media and all that jazz because you never know, Catherine might be throwing a lot of Ezio gifts in her Twitter. What's going on, Catherine? Tell them all your social media.
I am CSDESBINSCSDBIER on Twitter, Instagram, and most gaming platforms.
Sweet. Simon?
I am GOG Simon on Twitter, and if you want to find me on Mixer, I am 42 with the number 2 at the end.
Brilliant. Nixie, my dear.
I am Nixie117 on Twitter, and Nixie on Mixer and Xbox, so it's pretty easy.
And I'm Leah Jew, our most social media platforms, except for Xbox Live and Mixer, where I'm GOG Leah. And some people say Goglia, but it's G-O-G.
Googlia.
No.
Googlia.
Yes. G-O-G-lia.
It's Googlia.
But of course, you want to know everything there is to know about Girls on Games. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at The Girls on Games. We are Girls on Games on Instagram. Discord.me/Girls on Games if you want to continue this wonderful conversation about video games, pets, movies, whatever else. Just our random nonsense. But, of course, if you ever want to know anything about Girls on Games, go check us out at our home base. That's girlsongames.ca. So, once again, I want to thank everybody around my digital table here for having a wonderful podcast. I want to thank Tina. I want to thank you for listening. And have a great week and happy gaming. Talk soon. Bye.
Bye.